Good afternoon or evening, gearheads. Welcome to Speed City, your Sunday night with Speed City, the last one before the United States Grand Prix right here in our little hometown. This is John Massico. That was Jonathan Green. Are you getting as excited as me? Probably not that excited.
I am actually. No. I was about to say, I'm more excited for this Grand Prix.
Mayhem!
For that reason, there could be mayhem. No, I was thinking on the way here. I don't think there's been more on the line at an American Grand Prix in a long, long, long time.
Very good point.
And I don't mean just the championship. That is on the line.
Yeah, but new, young rookie drivers.
Lawson, they got six races to duke it out, Lawson and Tsunoda.
Yeah.
And that duke out could decide Perez's fate.
Yep.
You've got the Constructors' Championship that McLaren are now leading and want to hold on to, so they need another win. Red Bull need to bounce back if Max is going to hold his lead in the championship. It's a sprint race as well. A lot of points up for grabs, a lot of stories. I'm excited, genuinely.
And the number one college football team versus the number five football team playing at the same weekend.
That's Georgia are playing Oklahoma?
Oh, this is the local show, isn't it? Oh, golly. I watched the game.
I did not watch a moment of the Longhorn game.
Oh, it was good.
Yeah, it looked really good. It was 34-3 or something.
Awesome quarterbacks.
It was good if you're a Longhorn. It wasn't a good game from a competitive
standpoint. No, man, but the Sooners got angry, and that's if you've lived in Texas as long as I have, that's good stuff.
That's good. The only thing I saw online, the most prevalent thing was the empty stands.
Oh, right.
That on the Oklahoma side, I guess, after the third quarter or whatever it was.
Yeah, well, the coach was one of those that left the game, I think, because he was mad as hell.
All right, we're gonna talk Formula One and racing, I promice you, because we're going to talk USGP at COTA here in Austin in less than a week now, officially. Toyota, I mean, what a freaking story. The smallest team in Formula One teaming with the largest car manufacturer on the planet. All about that. We're going to get in deep on that. Lots to talk about.
Yeah.
We've got Ryan Marine coming on from, he's the IMSA guy.
One of the best.
Yeah, one of the best. We worked with him at Lone Star Le Mans here in Austin, Dakota. He's going to come on here in a little while and talk a little bit about that, talk about Petit Le Mans, but also talk about the championship, how it wrapped up. And we've got Chris Henley, your buddy from way back.
Schmidley!
To come on and talk about his book.
Which is awesome. I haven't finished it yet.
Hey.
I got to the it's a hoot, and as I expected it to be, because he's a hoot.
Have you gotten to the part where he writes about you? And
no, I haven't got that far. I'm kind of dreading that because he hasn't said much.
I'm
he thinks I haven't read it, but
that's going to be the end of our company when I get to that chapter.
I just don't know whether he followed me all around some of the shady areas I was going to.
This book is cool. It's got in a really great review by Craig Slater from Sky Sports. It's got a foreword by Gunther Steiner, and it stars all of the people from the F1 circus.
I tell you what it is. It's a real expose, and that's a bit of a sensational word, but it's definitely an insight.
It's 2024. If you don't sensationalize it, no one will pay attention.
Well, but what was interesting is that me and Chris, we were working in Asia, so we were a long way away from the action, so to speak, but it was just starting out in Asia. So there was Grand Prix like Malaysia and China coming online. We had the Macau Grand Prix, which was our big event locally. But Formula One was this, miles away thing. There was no Formula One drivers. Alex Young finally made it there from Asia. But it was really early days. So we were kind of teaching the Star TV audience of 55 countries what Formula One was all about. And me and Chris were literally given this ridiculous idea of going to as many races as they could afford. And we would make a half-hour preview show in a weekend.
Wow.
And get it out there by Saturday night.
I know both of you guys, and I can see that. I can see y'all pulling it off.
See y'all. Without sleep.
Yeah. All right. Well, this first segment, we're going to mostly talk COTA. And I've been saying it. I have to at least start with this because in Austin today, it is currently, I think it may have dropped to 99 degrees.
It's 100, yeah.
It was 100 degrees today officially at the downtown Austin.
Which means the people of ACL are burning up.
Yes. I'm actually kind of enjoying that, looking at the Dust Bowl pictures of ACL with...
There's nobody I really want to...
Well, I have lots of personal reasons why I don't like ACL, but just the fact that, one, it brings in more new people to our city
every
year.
Does nobody get your dad jokes at ACL?
Yeah. because so many people come here for ACL and they go, wow, look at the weather. It's great. And it's 100 degrees, dusty.
That's hot.
And that is hot.
And windy. It's miserable out there. I just drove right by it on my way to the studio.
No, but that's a good advert because they come here, it's 100 degrees. They go, oh, I'm going back to Cincinnati.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's my whole point. I'm with you. Yeah.
But anyway, what I've been saying about the USGP, remember when the very first year in 2012, I walked into the paddock and it was about 55 degrees in the morning. It was crisp. And by the afternoon, it was like 70 because it was in November 18th. And I was like, they have chosen the perfect time to have the USGP in Austin. And they kept moving it back and moving it back.
Well, we had Halloween and then Texas.
Right. But now I said it last year and a couple of years before, I said, they're going to mess up. And one of these years, it's going to be 100 degrees at the USGP. Well, I looked at the weather. It's not going to happen, but we've missed it by less than a week because it's still going to be upper 90s tomorrow.
Yeah,
but by Wednesday, Thursday, it's going to cool down.
That was another factor. We learned a lot about this at WEC not that long ago, is that the changes to the track, the weathering, the new surface, the temperature, et cetera, that's going to have a bearing. Remember the Pirelli tires don't always work for certain teams at the right time.
Yeah.
A lot of high speed and medium speed corners, a lot of slow corners. It's what, we've been talking about, Red Bull don't go well at Singapore and, all these sorts of things. Yeah. This has got everything because it is a combination of turns, and so I think COTA is always going to be a real struggle to get right.
I'm just thinking that this weather is going to be a little warmer than they're predicting. They're saying it's going to be low to mid 80s on Sunday. I think we could see maybe even as high as 90 degrees on Sunday. So it will play a factor on that brand new surface all the way down the front straight, leading up to turn one. Who knows?
And Sting and Eminem are playing together. No, they're not.
Not the same day. The same weekend.
It'd be quite interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, Sting Friday night and Eminem Saturday. So
who's Sunday?
Oh, by the way. Sunday is a new day. I forgot the name of them. It's a band from my demographic. No. Look it up. The circuit.com. They'll know. But
okay.
What I was going to say is we had Bobby on the show last week, Bobby Epstein, chairman of COTA, and he said that Eminem, you were out doing the Velocity Invitational.
That's right.
But he said that Eminem outsold Taylor Swift.
Wow.
Yeah. They added.
And he hasn't got the legs.
Why you gotta be so mean?
Nicely played, Casey.
That was quick, Casey.
I did not tell him I was going to bring that back up. Nice job. But for Taylor Swift, we had 80,000 people. Bobby said they had to add more stands. They've got 100,000 stands at the big stage back there on the back straight.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, yeah. So it's going to be one of those weird things where you're going to have some traffic at the end of the day after the sprint race.
Yeah.
Everybody had to get out and some people coming in for the concert, so...
Yeah, and if Sauber is still finishing off the sprint race, it's going to be a real trouble, isn't it?
All right, we talked about what some of the things to look for, and that is Liam Lawson, the Red Bull seat. I know one thing we can look for, some Toyota stickers on the Haas F1 car.
Which don't you think this is ironic? They are the Haas colors are exactly
Toyota
colors.
I know, think they actually kind of blend in. They don't really stand out.
Yeah.
One thing I put in my notes, I thought, I wonder if Dan Tauris will be at COTA that next weekend.
And he being the new head of Andretti Motorsports globally.
Yeah. Now, was that official, like, immediately? I mean, he was already his partner, so it's not like he...
Yeah. I tried to read as much as I could about it. And it sounds partly that Michael does want to step back and spend more time with his family. And partly, that him and Dan have probably been at loggerheads a couple of times, and it's Dan's money. He is the Gainbridge money. I cynically said, do you think Michael's stepping back so that the face of Andretti isn't an Andretti? Because that seems to be what Formula One...
If you listen to the
banter.
The banter, mostly from the UK, and I'm not trying to jump on the bandwagon that's been bashing the UK media over Formula One... Whatever. I'm just saying that's where I'm hearing that the most. But again, that is where most of F1 media comes from.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I believe that. I mean, look, let's face it. We got Chase Carey and all the rest of the gang at Liberty Media that are Americans.
Yeah, but Greg Maffei said it.
And Greg Maffei.
Yeah, but he said at Miami, I'll do everything in my power to stop you getting in as long as I'm involved in Formula One type thing.
Was that Maffei saying that?
Somebody, or Domenicali, maybe.
I think that was Domenicali.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's Domenicali. But anyway,
sorry, Greg.
The point is that there's plenty. It's an American-owned sport now.
Yeah.
I don't know if I put as much weight on that. And what we're talking about is how Andretti did kind of an American thing, which I was all with.
They ruffled some feathers.
They went in and said, hey, we're Andretti. We're coming in. That didn't work. They go, hey, we're Andretti. We got Cadillac. Now we're kicking the door in.
Mm-hmm.
And that still didn't work. So in other words.
And then Formula One went back to GM and said, hey, we don't really like these Andretti folk, but we really like you. And they said, no, we're coming in with Andretti or we're not coming.
That was kind of rumored. I never actually saw a story where that actually happened, where Formula One said, we're coming to you, GM and Cadillac.
I did.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
So back to the main part of that is I'm not sure that really was the biggest. I don't know how much that played into Andretti's decision, because I believed him when he wrote his open letter to the public last week when he said, basically, hey, I'm 62 years old. I have built an empire and across how many different motorsports?
Oh.
Successful.
Yeah.
And he's going, I'm going to step back into a more of an advisory role instead of an operational role.
What I don't understand is the timing. Michael's still in his prime. He's just built a massive facility in the UK. Just became a grandfather, yeah. But I'm talking about the business, which he built, by the way.
He just also has two 10-year-old
children. But he's just built this business and is very successful. A huge $250 million place in Indy, which Dan Troas paid for. He's also built an F1
in
England.
That's hard.
177, and he's King Charles. He's on the horse at the front with a big white hat. Well, no, that's not the white hat. Sorry, wrong.
But
image.
To your point that he really is still in his prime, and that is a little bit. I mean, it wasn't 2 years ago when he was at that ePartrade interview, and he said. I mean, he had that look in his eye like, you are not going to stop me. I am going to get into F1 no matter what.
I don't have a problem with the Americans being brash, and this is the Brit in me talking, right?
Okay.
And that's always going to ruffle the stoic Formula One Europeans that think they know everything. And that's fine. And America doesn't have a great record in Formula One as companies coming in.
Yeah.
Haas has not yet been successful, really. The US F1 team failed to get on the grid. And before that, even going back to the 60s, it was in and out. Penske had a bit time, Shadow came in. But, the Americans have never had a team of any real consequence in Formula One. What I do have a problem with is Mario getting kind of a little bit in the weeds with Congress. I don't think that rubs the wrong way, saying that they're going to say, we're going against the monopoly scheme.
Dude.
It's not fair.
Dude. The politicians, Mario said it, we did, and Michael said it, we didn't call them, we didn't invite them. Are you kidding? This is just raw red meat for any politician to go, I'm going to jump in the middle of this and, get my name out there and go, I'm going to stick my nose in and go, hey, we're going to go help out these Americans because they're getting...
Yeah.
Jacked around by these organizations.
Yeah, they loved it, didn't they? Yeah.
So that was great. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to get all into the weeds with the Haas F1 Toyota back into Formula One, back after these messages. All right, we're still live on YouTube. Let's see what's happening out there. We got some usual folks. Kevin Kelly says, showtime. How about them LSU Tigers? Sorry, Kevin.
Ouch.
He said, how about them? And he said, they're pulling it out. I guess they won. I really didn't follow much football at all. And Casey just let me know that I don't have to watch the Cowboys tonight, apparently. Spoiler alert.
Well, you could.
Yeah, but I'm just not going to give them any more of my time.
Ezekiel's playing.
How about them Cowboys?
Andy P, starting to prep for race week in Austin. All caps. Let's go, baby.
Yeah.
Kevin Kelly's coming to Austin, he says, getting all my batteries in a line for the trip. And Bravo Johnny, hey, Bravo Johnny, I haven't seen you lately. Toyota stalled their e-development programs, global scale, some weeks back. Then Haas, what's Toyota's capabilities? We're going to talk all about it, Bravo Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to get in the weeds with that.
Oh, I thought he was saying Bravo Johnny.
Oh, not Bravo Johnny. His name is Bravo Johnny.
I was going to say, I could change my name by default.
Yep. Let's see. What are we going to see? All right, coming back fast. That was quick.
Hello to everyone. This is Gunther Steiner. This is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
The smallest team in Formula One has just partnered with the largest car manufacturer in the world. Haas's new alliance with Toyota is a seismic moment in the brief history of the Haas F1 team, Formula One's youngest team. And this partnership with Toyota, I know that it's seemingly like they're trying to downplay it. This is just a technical partnership. The Toyota partnering with anybody is not to be downplayed.
Story.
That's right.
It's typical Japanese.
Yes, very true.
Very quiet, just like Honda. But the Japanese don't do anything without forethought and without results and without a plan.
And without resolve, too.
Yeah.
You taught me that one.
Yeah, and what I like about it is that there's obviously been a lot of Japanese influence on Formula One. Drivers, engines, etc. But there's never really been manufacturer success. Toyota, when they came in 2009, had a very well-funded team and very good drivers like Ralph Schumacher, Anthony Davidson, many more, who are Timo Glock, Kobayashi, Demata Zonta-Panis, Salo, McNish. Good drivers, right?
Yeah, that's a pretty Hall of Fame list.
And they had a fund to do it with, equal to Mercedes back then.
Yep.
But they never won a Grand Prix. And they were heavily criticized for that because they are the world's biggest manufacturer. They were or could have been the best supplied financial team at the time in 2009 and onwards. But they never really received the check. Success. And I also think that this is the first time that they have a Japanese, and the Japanese are very insular, team principal to deal with. They've always had to deal with Horner or McLaren or whoever it might be. So there's been the Japanese corner. That's what they said it happened in McLaren, is that the Honda were doing what they were doing in Japan and saying, here's your new engine. And McLaren saying, well, no, it needs to be 4 inches further back or whatever.
Yeah.
There was no, because they don't speak, you know, very few people speak Japanese. Io is the guy.
Yeah.
So, Nakajima was a team manager, but he was an ex-driver. This guy is an engineer, and I think that's really hugely important.
So do you think that Gene Haas, crazy like a
crazy
fox,
like a fox,
when he let Gunther go, and it wasn't a delay.
He's still hugging the whole paddock, isn't he?
Yeah. He is. When Gene let Gunther go, and Io was announced immediately as Gunther's successor, so do you think that Gene was saying, maybe there's already been some discussions, or maybe he thought maybe he could get Toyota, or do you think that's just too far ahead?
I think that's, you might know, well, right? Hey, listen, things happen way before we ever hear in the media. So yes, it makes a lot of sense, to be honest. But I don't know. I don't know what Stuart Haas run in NASCAR. Do they run Toyota? No, Hamlin does, but
yeah, I don't know.
Anyway,
I don't have the time. Man,
bottom line is Toyota don't turn their hand to anything. Right. They're successful in WEC. They're successful in Formula E. They're successful in World Rally. Motorsport is big for them.
Yeah. Well, and World Endurance Championship, been amazing. So I want to read a couple of quotes, because what I'm really kind of highlighted here is that what's in it for Haas and what's in it for Toyota Gazoo Racing.
Go.
And the first quote, this is from Toyota on their website, from their words, and it says,
Konnichiwa.
Konnichiwa. Through this partnership, the two sides aim to contribute to the development of the automotive industry by creating an environment in which young Japanese drivers, engineers, and mechanics can gain experience and grow in the FIA Formula One World Championships, the pinnacle of motorsports. And goes on to say, specifically, the agreement entails the participation in MoneyGram Haas F1 team test drives by Toyota Gazoo Racing, training drivers, engineers, and mechanics to enable the drivers to gain experience in F1 and allow the engineers and mechanics to learn how to analyze vast amounts of data, such as driving data, to effectively operate a piece of machinery for such a TGR, and the participation of engineers and mechanics in the Haas F1 race car aerodynamics development. In other words, it really focuses on their side of the equation, which I expect them to do, but Haas didn't quite have that same, it wasn't counter to that, but they kind of had their own, right?
Mm-hmm.
And here's a couple of quotes from, this is Io Komatsu. He says, I'm hugely excited that MoneyGram Haas F1 team and Toyota Gazoo Racing come together in this partnership to have a world leader in the automotive sector work alongside our organization and seek and develop and accelerate their own technical expertise. It's simply a partnership with obvious benefits on both sides. And he goes on to say, I'm naturally pleased that we had the support of the likes of Formula One and our long-term partner. Oh, wait, sorry. Together with Gene Haas. This is still Toyota. Sorry. I had one more quote that I wanted to get from IO. He said,
Could I make, while you look
yeah,
at it,
yeah, yeah, find
one
it.
Thing
Sorry,
I would say,
I'll highlight it and then
yeah,
let it go.
One thing that I would say is what a position to be in for a team based in America and Italy and the UK to be able to have another continent, i.e. Japan, with wind tunnels, with fantastic engineers, with fantastic know-how, do the backroom work for Haas while they get on with racing. And what I mean by that is the rules are changing in 26, right? So maybe the first thing that really Toyota start doing for Haas is getting them ready for that season while Haas go racing next year, because there's no break now in Formula One. You get to the end of, you know, you get to Vegas and collapse and then you're back at it again, you know, you're tested. Yeah. So I just feel that this is a huge, and it doesn't cost Toyota anything. It's what I mean. They're such a big company. So my summation is R&D is where they're really going to gain.
Yeah, I absolutely completely agree, but I can't find the quote from IO, but basically
isn't it IO, it's off to work we go.
Yeah. I mean, he does say this one. He says,
oh man, I thought I was a winner.
He said it's simply a partnership with obvious benefits to both sides, the ability to tap into resources available at Toyota Gazoo while benefiting from their technical manufacturing processes will be instrumental in our own development and increase our competitiveness. But I just think that it's huge for both. And you said something today on the phone when we were leading up to today, and you said it really hadn't thought about this, is that I've been talking all season long how we have one team in the midfield right now in Formula One, and that's Aston Martin.
Mm-hmm.
But you think that with this partnership,
I do,
that Haas now maybe not quite to the level of Aston Martin, but close. You know, with everything that they have now, they have such huge momentum.
Well, I mean, whether they do it or not is up to them, but they have the wherewithal
right now.
Right. And they have, I mean, we will never know the figures, but Toyota they can literally move mountains. They've got the money to do it. This is not, you know, this is the team that almost didn't sign the next Concorde agreement a few years ago. And yeah. Gene saying, what right. am I doing?
Not long ago.
So now they're in a completely different position. And yes, I would say that the aspiration should be for 25 and 26 to start fighting for fourth place, fifth place with Aston Martin.
Yeah, when you said it, immediately I was like, wow, that's really true, because you just don't bring in the resources, because you say they've got the money, but they've got the depth in motorsports. They've
yeah.
got the,
I mean, think about WEC, you know, yeah. I mean, look at what they're doing in WEC, and you're not telling me there's any fools in that development.
Yeah.
And he said, and by the way, I used to do Formula Nippon. I used to do the commentary for it. Super Formula, as it is now, is having a huge resurgence. Where do you think Lawson came from? And where do you think Gasly came from?
Yep.
And there is a host of Japanese seeing what Tsunoda has achieved for Honda. I mean, does this suddenly put Tsunoda back in the frame if he doesn't go with the Honda team anymore, or doesn't go to Red Bull because
really
Lawson outdoes him? But everybody in Japan knows what Lawson can do. And, you know, this is like Alonso going to Aston Martin, is that a chance to drive for Ollie Bierman must be, I mean, what a Christmas. What a Christmas he's having.
Yeah, and about 3 weeks ago or so, Nico Hülkenberg came out and was praising the Haas F1 team. Man, they have a really bright future. There's things in the pipeline. He obviously knew about it.
Yeah, I'm sure they did.
I was
yeah.
wondering whether he was having a few second thoughts there. I mean, think about it.
That's
look, look where Sauber is right now, and look at the disarray kind of going on over there. And now Toyota stepping into Haas, he's going, dang it.
Well, that actually is a really good comparison, right? So Haas were last year, right? And Sauber are going to be last this year. Look at the future for both teams, Audi and Toyota. Now, Audi, 6 and 7s, they fired people before they even started. They brought in the crazy Italian, who Chris will tell you about, Flavio Briatore. There's a lot of time yet, I think, on the clock. Audi will get there.
Yeah, but how long?
Yeah.
Nico Hülkenberg, how old is he? I mean, he's got had a wonderfully long career, but hey, I found this quote that I did want to play. I mean, read here from Io Komatsu. He says, with the new deal announced as a multi-year agreement, Komatsu was clear. He says, it's actually a long-term partnership.
Right.
Fundamentally for Haas's requirement basis, he said, this is all designed to make us more competitive as an F1 team to move up more towards the front of the grid. Mm-hmm. I mean, exactly what you're saying. But, and by the way, you know, Haas only has 300 people as a, they're, yeah, they are a tiny, tiny, tiny team.
And that's compared to what, 1,800 at 1,000 at,
1,000 plus at Mercedes. And probably Red Bull and Ferrari. Red Bull,
yeah. And Ferrari. Yeah.
Yeah. And
so you see where I'm going. The other point I want to make as a footnote is I don't think in all my time in Formula One, going back to the early 90s, and I mean, to be honest, I'm a pretty big historian too. I don't think ever since 1950 have we had the number of manufacturers, car manufacturers, in Formula One as we will have in the next few years.
Yeah, no kidding.
Ford, Audi, Toyota, McLaren, Mercedes, Ferrari, and, you know, Williams.
Cadillac, maybe GM.
Well, yeah.
Right?
And why not?
Yeah. Wow.
Pretty cool, huh?
That's really amazing.
And I didn't put Renault in there because I do think this is the end of the very road.
Yeah, well, we shall see, but... and by the way, Haas is going to have access to Toyota's former F1 facility in Cologne, which is now...
Which was beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, this is why they got so much criticism.
They use it in the World Endurance Championship. This is all of these facilities, all this stuff they're going to
get. And there's a wind tunnel there.
Yes.
And a lot of other teams have used that wind tunnel.
And they talk about being able to use their wind tunnel in addition to Ferrari's, but also they talk a lot about simulator work. Yeah. Like they're going to be able to use the Toyota. I mean, imagine the Toyota simulator facilities versus the Haas F1. I mean, because the Toyota is not messing around in World Endurance Championship either.
No.
So just, I mean, really incredible story. I mean, I tweeted out this a bombshell, getting a little clickbaity, but it's not. It's not clickbaity because it is a bombshell. I mean, don't you think this is just enormous?
I think it's, and I also think part of the reason it's not just that the Japanese culturally are quiet and conservative and not shouting from the hilltops. I also think that there's going to be some jiggery pokery or some very, very careful planning of how to spend your $135 million because...
Cost cap, right.
Right. You know what I'm saying? It's like, hey, Toyota could put $800 million in if they wanted to, but they can't.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's how they use this R&D.
Yeah, Toyota, right. Let's be clear. Toyota could write just as big a check as Mercedes, as anybody in Formula One.
Yeah.
So let's not forget that cost cap doesn't cover every expense you have in Formula One.
No.
There are things that you can spend money
drivers.
On. Right. And certain employees, there's like the top three employees are exempt. So, you know, I wonder if Adrian Newey's name ever came up and if you got Toyota. By the way, do you remember the photo that leaked back in July? I don't remember.
Yes. The Toyota, they were at Silverstone.
Yes.
And everybody went, no.
There was a Toyota
the top
executive.
Brass with executive. So, yeah, that's what I mean by we're always 2 or 3 months behind the actual news, which is why Hülkenberg came out with that quote. They denied it at the time, said, no. They were just visiting. They were just on holiday, like all Japanese, taking photos.
Yes.
But absolute rubbish.
Wearing his suit and tie in the back of the...
No,
garage.
Toyota don't get on planes and go around the world for just the hell of it.
One last thing. Komatsu said, not at the moment when asked if Toyota engineers will be embedded in Haas's F1 operation immediately.
Yeah, but that's the point, is that the cost cap is going to, they're going to have to really manage this well, but they can.
Oh, yeah. I'm really excited for the Haas F1 team. They, you know, I said it last week when you weren't on the show, but Günther was the right man for the job to get that team. It wouldn't have happened. Haas
same,
F1.
Dave O'Neill, the same.
Right. Wouldn't have happened.
Right time, right place.
Exactly. Right time, right place. Wouldn't have happened. But, you know, it's just time to shake it up.
Yeah.
And wow, what a difference.
Like you
a
say,
year
crazy
makes.
Like a fox. Maybe we've underestimated Gino.
Yeah, who knows? All right. Well, we're going to take a break. But coming up right after this, we're going to have Ryan Marine on with us. He's a fantastic sports car reporter and sideline reporter, too. And he's going to join us to talk about IMSA and the Petit Le Mans, and we'll be back after these messages.
Bob.
All right, let's see. Big get for Haas scoring Toyota Association. If successful, will help them to compete more with the larger teams, says Andy P. Yep. Kevin Kelly says, yo, I don't want to be the only one hitting the like button. Come on, peoples. Hit the like
Murphy,
button.
Hit the like button. Murphy's asleep.
Yeah, and Kevin Kelly, cost cap will be tighter in years to come. I can't remember how that
Well, we dropped
out.
Down to 135 during
But they raised
pandemic.
It after gone back up, inflation. Is it? They complained that, you know, like everything after the pandemic, inflation went up. So there was talk of them raising it. I don't remember.
Do I get more now? This inflation? Can I get more from Speed City?
You're going to get the same as you've always gotten, buddy.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Mike Bowles said, sorry, the NHRA distracted me. Well, that's a pretty good reason to.
Yeah.
You can always go back and play us on YouTube.
Hey, just a footnote. Chloe Chambers, how about that girl?
Yeah, man.
Signing up with
what
Ford.
What a run she's on.
Yeah, she's going good.
Yeah, kudos
really
to her.
Pleased for her.
Yep. Mike Bowles says, howdy from Eastland. Thanks. All right, back quickly.
Just saw a headline.
Hi, this is Max Verstappen, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
Welcome back to your Sunday night with Speed City here every Sunday night. It's John Massengale, Jonathan Green with me, and very excited to have our next guest on the line, one of the best sports car journalists out there.
Top notch.
Yeah, top notch. Ryan Marine. Ryan, welcome back, buddy. How are you?
Hey, John. Hey, Jonathan. Great to hear from you guys again. Pleasure to be on the show.
Oh, what a weekend you've had.
Yeah.
No kidding. Motul Petit Le Mans never disappoints. And we had a really fun one over the weekend.
Gosh, it was so many stories. And with the IMSA season wrapping up, I got to start with this. It just feels like maybe I'm just too excited. My son is mechanicking in that series. But it just feels like maybe the best IMSA season in a while. I mean, is that just me or is that a shared feeling?
No, I think you could make a pretty compelling case. It sports car racing is at its zenith right now. I think it's safe to say it's in a really special place. We saw that when the World Endurance Championship was at Circuit of the Americas, and IMSA's in a really strong position as well. I mean, there were storylines in all four classes, and man, it was a really fun show, that's for sure.
Well, I see your Peacock logo on your shirt. Good job yesterday. I saw you on the Peacock coverage. You did a great job, man.
Appreciate it. It was cool. Third race that they've had me on for this season, and it's something I've really aspired to and really enjoyed the opportunity to get to work with a really great bunch of folks at NBC, at Watkins Glen, and at Mosport, as it's still known to me, and then at Petit Le Mans at the end of the year.
Well, my favorite story yesterday was the Cadillac with, 4 minutes to go
Dodgy
in a 10-hour race? The lights stopped working.
Did they not put?
They went down to one headlight.
Didn't they put a quarter in the meter?
Yeah. So, Ryan, was there? I mean, the commentators on TV were talking about the possibility of them being black flagged because of that.
Yeah, if they hadn't gotten it fixed, the rules are pretty straightforward. At night, you have to have your headlights functioning, at least one. The rules are pretty clear about that. They'll let you get away with one. And that's what it was for a lot of the night running of the race for the 01 Cadillac for Chip Ganassi Racing. But for a little bit there, they were down to none, and that place is dark. I don't know if folks realize, we've seen night races in Formula One. Uh-uh. Those are lit up. They might as well be day races in terms of the visibility. Not so at Petit Le Mans. And so I'm sure for Renger van der Zande, who was driving at the time, those were some scary moments.
And you know, for people who don't know Road Atlanta, it's more like Brands Hatch than it is like Malaysia. I mean, it's a tiny, tiny circuit.
It is. It's really short. It's under 3 miles, and they had 53 cars starting this year. I think it was the most traffic density that they'd ever had at Petit Le Mans in its 27-year history, and it's just remarkable that it ran as clean as it did. I think that was one of the big storylines coming in. There were 13 full course yellows in the 10 hours last year, and there were even more cars this year. So we thought, surely there's going to be a great deal of yellow. I know a lot of teams planned their strategy around the fact they were expecting a lot of safety car interventions. And then we had 5 hours, more or less, without
clean racing
at one point, which, it was, but it caught everyone off guard. It was remarkable.
Well, the other big story that I saw, of course, was the Rexy, that dang lizard, because my son competes against them. But they had trouble and finished 11th, but still eked out the championship, right?
Yeah, just barely. Lauren Heinrich is the only driver that ran the full season in that car this year, and he's remarkable. I don't know that it's a name that people know just yet, but he's another one of these guys that has come from Porsche's single-make ranks and now is a factory driver and is one of these guys that can really separate himself from the rest of the factory drivers. Most of them operate at a really high level already, and it takes something special to separate from that pack, and he's established himself in the last couple of years as someone who can do that. But yeah, he had an amazing season. Sorry, the cat is walking in front of the camera there. I'm trying to keep her out.
I thought it was your, just your camera.
yeah. Is it a Jaguar?
yeah, that's right. Here she is for the viewers watching. She was being really well behaved until it actually mattered. Anyway.
I got Murphy here too. Much...
Yeah, we got the Labrador here in the studio. There we go.
He's just got up. He heard cat and got up.
That'll happen. But just quickly to cover off that story, Heinrich, it came down to just 4 points in a series where you get over 300 points for a win. So 4 points is nothing. If he hadn't won pole for the race in class, he would not have won the championship with the electronic gremlins that they have. So it was an amazing accomplishment.
Ryan, like you say, we're in an amazing period for both World Endurance and IMSA. What next? Is there anything to be able to top that? Are any more drive? You know, what should we look forward to next year that could potentially be another interesting factor? Are there any new manufacturers? I mean, I know there's some swapping of, I think Acura are in a swap, Cadillac are in a swap. What's going on?
Yeah, that's right. In IMSA, yes, we'll see different teams running those manufacturers. Chip Ganassi Racing, that was actually their swan song with Cadillac, and they really went out on a high note to be able to take that win. But I think if you're looking globally, the big news recently is Hyundai announced that they were going to be coming into sports car racing, prototype racing through their Genesis brand. That's a couple of years out at this point.
We had some media albums.
Reports. And that's right. We had... some media reports that Mercedes might be eyeing a prototype program as well. McLaren's been kicking the tires seemingly for a decade at this point. So there are a lot of big name OEMs that are interested. And the best news is it seems like those that we have are interested in sticking around. I think Lamborghini's the one we've got the most question marks over, but I think they'll be involved in some capacity, whether it's in the States or in the WEC, is probably one or the other. But between those two manufacturers that I've talked about with Mercedes and certainly with Hyundai and through Genesis coming in, I think there's a lot to be excited about. And already we have just an abundance of manufacturer involvement. So it's a really special time.
Hyundai the only electric car I would consider the Ioniq 5N.
Yeah, nice.
The one where they programmed into the software where you can make it act like an ICE with a dual clutch automatic and the sound. I'm just waiting for the hackers to drop in like a Ferrari V12 into that and make it sound like that. But Ryan, I want to ask you something. You talk about the momentum that IMSA has, and clearly WEC has momentum. Look at the manufacturers in WEC, too. And we were just talking about all the manufacturers in Formula One. Some people were saying this Drive to Survive, rising tide, lift all boats.
Yeah, partly.
Do you think that is part of what's going on with sports cars?
It doesn't hurt. I think when you do have some of the trickle down of Formula One drivers whose careers in F1 have petered out, finding homes in sports car racing, they bring a fan base with them. Some of that was cultivated through Drive to Survive. Certainly here stateside, I think road racing generally has benefited from the TV show, because if you show someone a sports car race, at least they'll have some notion of what they're looking at. It's not like in the pre-Drive to Survive days when I think the general American audience, if they knew anything about motorsports, it was probably oval racing and it was probably NASCAR. So there is something there. But in the sports car world, I think the biggest news is the fact that the rule sets on both sides of the pond now are unified. That's a really big deal, because both in the prototypes and in GTs, if you're an OEM, you can build a car and you can race it at Le Mans, at Daytona, at Sebring, at Petit Le Mans. To be able to take these cars that are massive investments, especially on the prototype side, and to be able to know you can compete on the biggest stages in sports car racing, That to me is the appeal. And I hope that we can keep the two groups, IMSA on the American side and the ACO on the French European side. I hope we can stay in alignment for a long time to come, because in my estimation, at least, that's really the biggest factor for this high watermark that we've reached right now.
What else from yesterday? And I've knocked out a couple stories there, but what else was your favorite from yesterday?
And I think to see some of the stars of the future doing what they're doing. You know, Connor Zilich is a guy that a lot of folks on the NASCAR side are talking about. He had another podium. Wow. This guy has won in multiple types of stock cars this year. He's won in MX5 cars. He's won 24 hours of Daytona, 12 hours of Sebring in an LMP2. And he finished on the podium yet again. That car actually was two laps down early in the running, and they ended up finishing third.
So pretty remarkable stuff. And I can chip in here. As you know, I do Trans Am. And he and Brent Cruz were both world kart champions a couple of years apart.
Correct.
But good friends. And those two names are going to be household names. Connor Zilich and Brent Cruz. Remember those names. They are the Lawsons and Sonodas. Maybe not in Formula One, but Zilich is going all the way. And he's going to be another Denny Hamlin type figure soon.
What about the Porsche? Porsche sweep yesterday, all the championships, that was a crazy story.
Yeah, I think it's something like 9 titles between manufacturers championships, drivers championships, and then you've got the Endurance Cup as well. That's part of the IMSA series. And Porsche, they had a phenomenal year. It started with a win in the Rolex 24. It looks like they are almost certain to win the World Endurance Drivers and Manufacturers Championship as well. And then with the season that they had, Dane Cameron and Felipe Nasr winning the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship GTP title just last night, it was a remarkable accomplishment. And for Dane Cameron, this is a guy who probably should have been an IndyCar star.
Yeah, you're right.
A low water mark for open wheel racing in the States, and there just weren't many opportunities for talented but unfunded, let's say, American drivers, but he's found a really nice niche in sports cars. It was his 4th IMSA championship, which is the most in the modern era. Only Antonio Garcia has been able to match him. So really remarkable what he's done, and he's done it in GTs and now in prototypes too. And I thought that was a really cool story that he was able to do it with Porsche and with Team Penske.
Yeah, that was awesome. Well, Ryan Marine, hey, everybody, if you want to follow Ryan, he is a fantastic sports car guy. R-Y-A-N-M. Oh, you spell it, Ryan. Make sure I don't mess it up.
That was smart. Yeah, I have to think about it, too. M-Y-R-E-H-N is the last name, and somehow it's pronounced Marine. It's anybody's guess.
Yeah, follow him. And Ryan was with us at the Lone Star Le Mans. We had a blast and very professional, great guy. Hope to work with you again, Ryan. Thanks for coming on the show, buddy.
Thanks, Ryan. Good to see you.
Yep, we'll talk to you soon.
Jonathan, anytime. Thank you.
All right. Well, we're not going to go to break. We're going to go straight to our next guest because what am I doing introducing our next guest? Because, Jonathan, you go way back, decades.
He was my producer for many years, and we had a blast. His name is Chris Henley. He is a larger-than-life character. He's funny as all hell. I've been privileged to have worked with him. He's a huge success in Formula One, and now he's written a book about it, and it's a good one.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Hey, Chris, how are you, buddy? Uh-oh.
Chris, are you there?
We can hear you, Chris.
We'll get him.
Hold on. I'll text him, say, we can hear you.
Christoph van Rensburg. Chris. So anyway, we were in Asia together.
Maybe we'll take a quick break.
All right.
And then we'll get Chris sorted and we'll come right back after this. Hey, Chris. All right, we're still live on YouTube. Chris, are you there, buddy?
Not hearing. Hello, hello.
Yeah, we got
hearing
you.
Anybody?
Yeah,
we can hear you.
We can hear you.
Hello, hello.
Yeah, we can hear you, buddy. Here, let me put it in the chat.
Yeah,
we can hear you, Chris.
Hello, hello.
Can you hear us?
He's putting his headphones on. Can you hear us, Chris? Yo, Chris.
Hello,
Chris,
hello.
Chris.
Chris.
Turn your headphones on. Go to your audio settings and Zoom.
Yeah, he can't hear us.
Oh,
that's the problem.
You can hear me. Oh,
yes.
Great. I can't hear you, fortunately. Meeting group tab. Let me see. Audio.
I'm Liam Lawson, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
That was Liam Lawson bringing us back. We're still trying to get Chris's audio working. He's working on that.
He's not technical.
He's not
technical. That's not his forte.
That's not his forte?
Nah.
Well, why don't you give a bio of Chris?
Okay.
And talk about that. And then...
Yeah. So let me tell you, first of all, Chris Henley works for South American TV, for Fox in South America. He's from England, but we met in Hong Kong, and we worked for Star TV, and we did Formula One coverage for Star TV, and he was my producer. And we would go to as many races as we could muster.
Yep.
In terms of budget-wise. And we did go to a lot, and we did some great work, personally, I think. Especially Chris's work ethic was brilliant.
Yeah.
And we managed to bang out half-hour pre-shows with pieces to camera, with interviews with drivers, and with, you know, lots of features and graphics and all the rest of it. And we managed to do it all between a Thursday and a Sunday and managed to get it out live in Asia a half hour before the actual Grand Prix. So, yeah, it was a great experience for us. We had a lot of fun doing it. And the book is called Starting at the Back of the Grid, Misadventures Inside Formula One's Flying Circus. Chris Henley is the author, and we're trying to get his audio right working. And it's a foreword by Gunter Steiner. And as you say, Craig Slater said some really nice things. This book is an exhaustive compendium of how not to make sports television. Read it at your peril. But that's a backhanded compliment from Mr. Slater.
Yeah.
Well, have we got him?
No, we don't have his audio yet. I'm gonna tell him to give us just try calling the phone number.
Okay.
See if we can get us that way. But yeah, I mean, amazing book. Look, I mean, there's the cover. You can get it on Amazon, all the usual places. And he said he was an author and TV producer, but I see him with a picture of a microphone talking to Bernie Ecclestone.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, one man band. I mean, like I said, for Fox, he plays, you know, plays the presenter role, plays, I mean, you know, he's jack of all trades. Really good, really impressive. And funny as all hell. And he's really popular in the paddock. But what I like about the book is, you know, what you see on TV is, you know, is polished, is good.
Yep.
But it's not the experience. It's not seeing the drivers, you know, in the gym or going to, I don't know, let's say Malaysia and seeing, you know, and see going for a massage, for example, and finding out that every Formula One driver has been there that week and the guys are all talking about it. Wherever you go around the world, it's absolutely awesome. And the experience is the traveling circus, as he calls it, is quite remarkable, really.
All right, well, cool. I just told Chris to call us on the landline.
I'll tell you one story. So we were in Barcelona at the Formula One in Barcelona, and we were struggling with our edit, and we were struggling with language, and we were struggling to get our half hour done on the Saturday night. And I think we must have I kid you not, I think we finished the edit at 5 a.m. We then spent 2 hours feeding it across to Asia because, you know,
the internet was slow.
The internet was very slow. You booked satellite back then.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and that was expensive.
What year was this?
Mid-90s or early 90s. Yeah. So,
mid-90s, okay.
Yeah, early 90s. Anyway, we basically stayed up all night, right?
Yeah.
So then we had to go back to the track. And I distinctly remember this. We were inside turns 3 and 4. You know how it loops round after the long straight? We were inside the track, right? Through the tunnel. We were inside. And I lay down and he lay down. I think about half an hour later, it was lap 35 and we were fast asleep in the middle of an F1 race.
I thought you were about to say another F word, but you said fast asleep.
Fast
okay,
asleep.
Good.
Hey, right. Schmenley.
Mr. Henley, how are you, buddy?
Fred, how you doing? Sorry about that.
I was just saying, technical is not your prowess, is it? Creativity is.
read the book. It's all in there.
Hey, I've just given you a huge, I've told everybody what the book's about, but just tell us and I've read, it's 18 minutes. What is it? No, I've read the first five words. It's really good.
Hey, your bookmark is, you're into, you're in page 20.
I'm at page 20. Haven't mentioned me at all yet.
Well, you're in there, Johnny Green. It's all about you. You just have to carry on reading.
Yeah, gotcha.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, give us some anecdotes why you did it and just put it in perspective, because I was just saying that what you see on TV, whether it be in South America or England or in the US, is so different than the experience of being in the circus.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the book kind of deals with three kind of intertwining subjects. One is the personal journey of myself, which obviously you feature a lot in, Johnny, of course, because we shared that time back in the early 90s when we worked for Star TV together. And it's sort of trying to get into Formula One. You were obviously already on the television, and I was kind of working in bars in Hong Kong, trying to get into the business. And that's when we sort of first met. So that's one story. It's kind of like an autobiographical part of it. And then there's it deals with the sort of behind the scenes, what everybody does in Formula One, like from the photographers, what they go through. There's a section in the book with some amazing Formula One photographs that have been given to me by the best photographers in Formula One. So it's kind of like what happens with these people, what they do, and how what their role is, and who do you have to know in order to get along in the paddock. And then the third side of it is kind of like the history of Formula One. So people that might not know about it, the scandals, you know, the things that have happened over the years in F1. So it sort of brings people up to date. So the reason why I wrote it was I wrote it with my brother, and one Christmas we were with my mum, and I was telling some funny stories about F1, and my brother was like, "Oh, you should write about this." And I said, "Well, funnily enough, I kind of started writing about it," and that's when we kind of joined together and wrote it. And I must say this straight off the bat, is my mother, who was 94, who died this year, unfortunately. Oh, she died just after reading the last page of the book. So,
poetic.
Yeah. I don't know, was the boredom of reading it? Or
she goes, what did I bring into the world?
So that was kind of how it started off, a kind of a labor of love. But then as we got into it, you know, there was so much to say, because it is a fascinating scenario. And then the popularity of Formula One obviously picked up and became, everybody wanted a little bit to know about it. So I kind of included all these kind of behind the scenes things that people might not be aware of. But the principal point of the book is that it's funny.
The truth is, you were doing Drive to Survive in print before Drive to Survive had even been thought of.
So,
well, this is it. It was kind of like off the back of that. I mean, I was lucky enough to get Gunter Steiner, who was obviously one of the major stars that came out of that series, to do the foreword to the book. So, it was amazing. It was an amazing experience. You know, all the people that, you know, you spend this time with, and to see how helpful they were with, you know, trying to do something, because obviously I'd never written a book before. I just wanted to sort of get the story out. And one of the main themes, Johnny, I must say, is when we first met in Hong Kong. So there's that story of us going to Monaco for the first time. when we arrived there, the cameraman lost his camera and is on the way from Monaco to the...
Yeah.
Well, he actually lost it
at the airport.
Well, that's right. So we have to go through that.
Let me set this up. So we're at Nice Airport. The cameraman turns around at me and Chris says, it's gone. Nice Airport is well known for the robbers.
What a very expensive camera.
$60,000 camera. The only camera we've got. We brought it from Hong Kong, or he brought it from England. And then I go, well, nobody in Formula One's going to have a spare camera. And, it's the Cannes Film Festival. We're not going to get one anywhere in the south of France.
Oh, my God.
Because the whole of the world were there. So I went into a deep depression. Chris, we're headed to the bar. I followed him.
Well, wait a minute. Let's back up a little bit. So, Chris, your career in media started by meeting Jonathan Green in a bar in Hong Kong. This sounds like the
That's
beginning
not a good
of a,
start, is it?
It's the beginning of a joke. So, yes, the humor I can only
Pretty
imagine.
Much.
Chris, we are out of time, buddy.
Hey, but Chris, I'm going to call you in the week, and I'm going to extend this because we got a special show next week, obviously, for Austin. So I want to, if you don't mind, and you'll indulge me, I'd like to do some more of this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, but I'd be happy to. And I just want to say thank you for having me on the show, especially you, John. Well, Johnny, obviously, but you too, John. The first time I ever met you, you took me out for a dinner in Austin. A Mexican meal. So you're both good people. So anytime, I'd love to talk to you.
Lovely to see you, buddy.
Chris Henley, thanks a lot, buddy. All right, everybody, thanks for tuning in. Don't forget, we're going to be on the microphones at CODA doing radio, PA, you name it. And we will see everybody if you're going next weekend. If not, we'll talk to you on the radio.
Happy trails.